I like the hotels that have the rotating restaurants. You know, I've never been in a rotating restaurant, but one time I took my girlfriend to a merry-go-round, I put her on it, and I gave her a burrito.
Season 1, 2, 3.
Coming to you live on tape from the mean streets of Country Club Drive, this is the ABCs and 123s of Rock. I am your host, Tony Phillips, alongside, as always, Mr. Randy McGuire. Randy, how's it going?
I'm doing great, Tony. I got a question. Last episode, was it cold in the studio? You usually wear a cool rock and roll t-shirt, or maybe I think you had a Cincinnati Reds t-shirt on last episode, but a sweater.
Well, you know, a little chilly.
I'm going to tell you something for your own good, pal. That's the worst fucking sweater I've ever seen. It's a Cosby sweater. A Cosby sweater.
You know how long I've been waiting to use that clip.
So we are at episode 11, bands that begin with the letter K. I had 17 bands. Probably could have squeezed a couple more bands in there, but I think I've got a pretty good list.
I've been excited about K because there's a couple K bands that I've wanted to discuss, and I'm really looking forward to discussing my guilty pleasure this episode. But yeah, K's interesting.
So without any further ado,
round one.
Randy, your honor, your honor.
You want the best and you got the best. The hottest band in the world, Kiss!
I grew up just the biggest Kiss fan. We had Kiss concerts in my garage. And even though I always wanted to be Ace Frehley, I was the only one that could blow fire. So.
And Gene Simmons will play anywhere for money. You know,
so. We weren't getting paid, and we almost burnt the garage down a couple of different times because we were very heavy on the smoke bombs and the sparklers and the stupidity of gasoline. So
yes, and the follies of youth.
Kiss, one of the...
Tell us about Kiss.
I'll right? tell you anything you want to know about Kiss.
Wicked Lester.
Wicked Lester, that's where they got their start. Just if you watch the old videos of Kiss, Gene Simmons really does look demonic.
I think the first time I saw him without makeup beyond the when they took their makeup off on MTV was the movie Runaway.
Yeah.
Tom Selleck, and he was the villain.
Yeah.
I think that was the first time I saw him, and I'd look at pictures of the band, and I was like, that's not the same guy. No, that's not the same guy. Yeah. And it was the same guy.
The makeup, the stage show. I don't even know where to begin when we were talking about Kiss because I got 50,000 stories going through my head. Just how they used to rehearse, how they would practice. And then people come see them and leave before, like the first note. As soon as they saw the makeup, they're like, pfft, and leave.
Well, you know, to take Japanese kabuki makeup
right,
and put it in the context of a rock band, that is a tall order. You are going to get some fans, but you're also going to scare a lot of people away.
Right.
And I will admit, as a young child, they kind of spooked me, especially Gene Simmons. He was a little scary until Kiss Meets the Phantom.
I was going to mention Kiss Meets the Phantom, too.
As my wife put it, it's like a live-action Scooby-Doo.
It is, and I bought Kiss Meets the Phantom on videotape when I was in Montana, and I literally said, oh, this is for my nephew.
I'm just more surprised that you could actually buy it on video.
Indeed. They got off to a very slow start. They went to Casablanca Records. Their very first album is called Kiss. And really, at the time, did nothing. And then they came out with Hotter Than Hell. And
which, that's a great song.
Oh, Hotter Than Hell is a great song. Also, Let Me Go Rock and Roll, one of my favorite Kiss songs. The album I had of this, you could literally look at this song and tell how many times I just put it to this part. Just Ace Frehley was like...
Of all of the members of KISS, Ace Frehley was probably the best musician, followed by Gene Simmons.
Gene Simmons is an underrated bass player, without a doubt.
Great bass player.
Yeah, very underrated. But yeah, Ace Frehley is a character. I've read every member of KISS's book, and it's hard to believe that, you know, according to their book, every member of KISS was the driving force of KISS, if you read their books. Peter Criss was the driving force of KISS, if you read his book. Paul Stanley was the driving force, if you read it. And obviously, Gene Simmons. Again, and Ace Frehley's book is probably the best and probably the most...
Truthful?
Truthful, yeah. I mean, he talks about his drug addiction. He talks about his alcoholism. He talks about wrecking cars. And he talks about how he did not play on a lot of the albums. He was laying in the studio just completely bonkers. And his guitar player, the guy who actually did it,
Bob Kulick,
yes, which was Bruce's brother. And he's like, hey, how'd I play today? He's Ace, you never sounded better. But he admits it. Do you think Peter Criss would ever admit that he was not a very good musician? And he could not sing. I don't care what anybody says. Beth is a good song, but it's not. I mean,
now wasn't Beth
Beck?
Yeah, it was from his band before KISS.
Yeah,
I mean, sort of,
kind of. It was something that rolled around in his head, and it was going to be called Beck. And then Gene's like, Beth. So Gene takes full credit for Beth, which was their first number one hit. But the song Hard Luck Woman is a Peter Criss sung song, and I like it. I mean, I really, really do, because it's a little departure from KISS. It's mellow. But Paul Stanley wrote that song for Rod Stewart. That was his intention. And Peter Criss said, no, I'm a better singer than Rod Stewart, and I'm going to sing that song. And he sung the song.
In all fairness, he's not a better singer than Rod Stewart.
So that brought us to Dressed to Kill, probably my favorite, or not my favorite, one of the really good album covers. That album brought us to probably, in my opinion, maybe one of the biggest rock anthems of all time.
Can't talk about KISS without talking about this song.
Oh, hell no. I played this at a football game, and I would bet any amount of money you were there. And the linebacker is standing there playing air guitar. And I'm like, this is damn awesome, you know. I have to say, one of my favorite KISS songs, and like I said, big rock anthem, that was off Dressed to Kill, which comes to another one of my favorite album covers, Destroyer. You know how many Destroyer t-shirts I see? I mean, I have one. I that's one of my favorites.
Had a poster.
Yeah, poster is awesome. Destroyer was a great album. A little bit, you know, concept here and there. I just love Detroit Rock City. If you listen to the album, I like the guy getting in his car, the keys rattling, the car starting, and it's pretty cool. Then the crash. Now, if I asked you, minus Rock and Roll, what's your favorite KISS song?
Either 100,000 Years or Cold Gin, probably.
My favorite KISS song never gets played in concert. I don't even think they played it in support of Rock and Roll Over.
You need loving. You're looking out for new romances. Yeah, it's true. You know you got to take your chances. When I dare.
Yeah, I don't think they ever played this.
The only time I've ever seen it played, I think on like one of their cruises or conventions or whatever, they played acoustically.
And again, I think you kind of throw Rod Stewart on this.
Yeah.
And it's like, hey, it's a Rod Stewart song.
Paul Stanley wrote this. He said, I want to write a Led Zeppelin sounding song. I don't really get the Led Zeppelin connection here, but I'm glad he wrote it.
The drums aren't heavy enough, for starters.
I think where a lot of people fall short, I think last episode we talked about... background vocals, and I mean, they sounded good. I mean, a lot of people took KISS as a gimmick band and not, you know, didn't take them very seriously, but when it comes right down to it, they were a good, solid band. That's my favorite KISS song.
It would be a hard call between Cold Gin and 100,000 Years. Oh, Shock Me.
Shock Me, and I'm getting to Shock Me, yeah. Literally got shocked. It reminds me of Almost Famous, where the guitar player grabs the mic and gets shocked.
That happened to me at a 4th of July show. There was a thunderstorm before we went on. There was a puddle on the stage. And I was standing in the puddle and put my lips to the microphone. I shocked the piss out of myself.
Wow, that's crazy.
And I would not wish that on anyone.
Your lightning's all I need. My satisfaction grows. You make me feel at ease. You even make me glow. Don't cut the power on me.
I love the guitar in this.
That fuzz.
Yeah.
And you can tell that's Ace. It sounds like how he looks.
Yeah. Yeah, I dig it. Kiss Alive caught a lot of flack, which really Kiss Alive is the reason that they really broke through.
That was the album that made them famous,
right?
Was Kiss Alive.
Yeah, and because they said you got to experience Kiss Live to understand Kiss. But Kiss Live is a lot of explosions. They run, for those high 6-inch high-heeled boots, they still run around the stage like crazy. And they're not always at their mic, and you've got all the booms and all the...
The lifts that they had that would lift the drum set up.
Yeah.
Their live show, especially their 70s-era live show, was fascinating because nobody was doing stuff like that at the time.
A smoking, flaming guitar, blowing fire, spitting blood. Like you talked about the risers and all the lights early... they had to use a forklift to raise the drums, and things just didn't work out well. And then finding out that Peter Criss was almost passing out because of all the smoke. But look at Kiss Alive 2 open up that double album. That's the fire, two risers in the air, the drums are way up in the air. It's cool as hell.
Yeah, Kiss's pyro was groundbreaking.
Yeah.
And the pyro that they do now is phenomenal. I think they set a Guinness record.
I would not doubt it.
Not this past New Year's, but the New Year's before, they played a show in Abu Dhabi or someplace like that. There's Kiss, there's their music,
right?
But gotta see
it's together. Yeah, it's together. It's something. Yeah, on their first reunion tour, the Brooklyn Bridge, their fireworks are going off at the because it was an outdoor arena, and I mean, they incorporate as much as they can to make the shows bigger than possible. You can go down a YouTube Kiss rabbit hole and get lost for days. I've done it, and I had a big Kiss DVD, 6 DVD set or whatever, and oh my god, I think I watched it in one setting. Dynasty, you know, you got the I Was Made for Loving You, that is more of a disco track, which if I had a guilty pleasure Kiss song, that would probably be it.
I actually listened to it not 2-3 weeks ago, and it's like, yeah, but I could hear Donna Summer singing it just as quick as I could hear them.
Well, Gene dated Donna Summer, so.
Why didn't she sing it then?
I don't know.
Are you going to talk about The Elder now?
No, I'm going to skip The Elder. If you listen to interviews or the books that I've read, they really try to push, you know, it was just ahead of its time, and it sucks. I'm sorry, but...
I like World Without Heroes, but the videos, I'm waiting for Gene to start crying in the video and stuff, because he looks so sad and morose, but he's in his demon makeup and stuff, and it's like, what's going on here? But The Elder,
yeah,
it's like, he tried.
Yeah.
A lot of bands try concept albums, and they don't really work out.
It did not work.
It did not work.
I didn't even do any research for Kiss. I mean, I got some clips together and that was it. But I got a question. This album, that's Creatures of the Night, is that not the first Vinnie Vincent?
I just know that was the first Eric Carr album.
Yes. Which Eric Carr, there's a tragic story right there.
And then his replacement, Eric Singer, is a fantastic drummer. He's probably the best of all of their drummers.
Without a doubt. And I think we talked about before the places that Eric Singer shows up.
But you look at him now, and I don't recognize him. He doesn't look like that big, long, like Sebastian Bach, blonde,
right,
long blonde hair from Badlands.
Well, since we're talking about that, that's one of my points of contention with Kiss today, is I don't like the fact that Tommy Thayer is wearing Ace's makeup, and I don't like Eric Singer wearing Peter Criss's.
I don't like the concept of Tommy Thayer having the Gibson with his face on it in the Space Ace makeup.
Right.
I mean, I like Tommy Thayer. He's a great guitar player. you know, I think it just came down to Paul and Gene saying, well, you guys are going to wear.
He's well, what Gene Simmons wants to do is he wants to incorporate Kiss.
All just, new musicians yeah, after
and,
they're done.
Yeah, and just, and you know, hell, it's being done with some bands right now as it stands. And when you made the comment that you like Tommy Thayer, he's a good guitar player, that's a quote from Ace Frehley. I like Tommy Thayer. He's a good guitar player, but he's never had an original thought in his life.
I think they get along now. Maybe Ace is softening up or something.
I think Paul Stanley's the big reason why Ace is not back with Kiss on any terms right now.
But they, you know, they did make great music together. And I like Benny Vincent in Lick It Up. And I like Mark St. John. And I like Bruce Kulick. And I like Tommy Thayer. And I think Ace would do it if Paul would let him.
So let's talk real quick about the four solo albums. I think everybody agrees that Ace Frehley's was the best.
And, oh, far and away.
Yeah, New York Groove has become a staple. My favorite Ace Frehley song, period, is either Shock Me or Rip It Out. I dig Ace Frehley.
Some of the Frehley's Comet stuff was really good.
Yeah.
I wish that they would have taken their time with the solo albums, and it could have probably been something.
They all went gold. I think they all went platinum, but they were so hot at the time.
They could have farted into a microphone right. And sold a million copies.
And I don't think they were actually purchased. It was the record company thing.
Units.
Right, there you go. So I'm going to say my number one pick, unless you have anything else to add.
I can add that the Unmasked period was beneficial to them with the advent of MTV and stuff, because right. You didn't see I Love It Loud. You didn't necessarily see Detroit Rock City,
nope. But
you did see Lick It Up, and you did see Tears Are Falling when they decided to put the makeup back on for their farewell tour that started in 1996 and is still
farewelling.
And they're still farewelling. I enjoyed the Unmasked Kiss as much as I enjoyed
yeah. Original
Kiss. But of the two, I prefer Kiss with makeup.
Oh, I do too.
I prefer Love Gun and stuff like that.
So, Kiss, number one.
My number one pick, actually from Katy, Texas, via Springfield, Missouri. King's X. Probably my favorite, as much as Eric Johnson's one of my top three guitar players, King's X will always be one of probably my top three favorite bands
awesome.
Ever. They didn't get a fair rap. They became what a lot of people referred to as musicians' musicians.
Right.
And as a musician, I can say that's true. They took everything from metal to the Beatles and poured it all in a big blender and mashed it together.
I respect the hell out of three-piece bands.
Doug Pinnick, Ty Tabor, Jerry Gaskell. Gaskell and Pinnick were actually brought together by Gregory Xavier Voles of the Christian hard rock band Petra.
I remember Petra.
And Voles, along the way, ditched them. And so Gaskell and Doug Pinnick started working for Christian guitarist Phil Keaggy as their backup band.
Okay.
Ty Tabor was in an opening band for a show that was in Springfield, and their drummer had quit the night before. And Ty Tabor was the guitar player. He was going to go ahead and play drums for that show, but he didn't have a drum set. And Jerry Gaskell lent him his drum set.
Nice.
A little later, they were convinced to move to Houston, and more specifically, Katy, Texas. The deal fell through, much like the Petra deal, and along the way they met Sam Taylor, who was the vice president of ZZ Top's production company, who suggested two, and they became the band King's X. In 1988, they released Out of the Silent Planet, had The Power of Love, which you heard, Shot of Love, King, which is a great song, and one of my favorite King's X songs, a song called Goldilocks. Along the way, they toured with Cheap Trick, Blue Oyster Cult, Robert Plant, a band called Hurricane, which were real big for about a week in the 90s, Anthrax, Testament, Overkill, MOD.
Yeah, I think Pearl Jam, Motley Crue, AC/DC, Scorpions.
That was later, but yeah, they did get some, they did do a lot of touring. In 1989, Gretchen Goes to Nebraska came out. And I guess the story about how they got the title was one of the roadies. They would just like shout out random garbage every once in a while. And one of the roadies said something about Gretchen Goes to Nebraska, and they ended up using that. And like 15 years later, they met back up with the roadie and said, you know, that was you, the one that came up with that title. And he's like, I don't even remember. The difference, Over My Head, of the Burning Down, Summerland, Mission, and Fall on Me. This album was actually kind of a concept album that was derived from a short story by Jerry Gaskell. As you can probably maybe figure out, their relationship with the Christian contemporary music crowd through Voles and Phil Keaggy, they continued a lot of their Christian themes.
Right.
Though they did criticize some religion and televangelism in the song Mission. They were just a rock band that just had like these Christian themes flowing.
Right.
1990s. Faith, Hope, Love was the album that probably got them as popular as they would get. It's Love, I'll Never Get Tired of You, Fine Art of Friendship, Six Broken Soldiers, which is the first song that I think Jerry Gaskell sang lead on, and I Can't Help It. Fantastic album, top to bottom. I could listen to their first six albums nonstop from beginning to end, over and over and over.
Yeah, if you didn't know that they were in that Christian rock vein, you have to be told.
I think so. Doug Pinnick, later in an interview, was talking about how he was singing about, he was brought up in a very religious household. Mm-hmm. His viewpoint on religion and what he was singing about, he was singing about his confusion with religion.
Right.
Is this really it?
Yeah.
And stuff like that. And
didn't he make a comment, was Jesus Christ really the Son of God?
And it kind of caught a little heat for it. Yeah. But I mean, as far as whatever kind of heat he would catch. 1992, their self-titled album, King's X, came out, which had Black Flag, which was a huge hit for them. I say huge. It wasn't huge like a Def Leppard hit.
Right.
Ty Tabor, another guitar player for the ages.
Yeah.
And his sound is very distinct. He used Gibson Lab amps. You can't find them anymore. And if you can find them, they don't quite sound like that. It was something in the pickup combination that he was using and such that got him a very distinct guitar sound, and a sound that I've tried to copy just like Eric Johnson's over the years, and I just never have gotten close because it's just, I don't have a lot of guitar playing, and the tone and stuff is in your fingers, and my fingers play guitar this way, and Eric Johnson's fingers play it that way, and Ty Tabor's play it that way. '94 brought us probably my favorite album. And I'll tell you what, my father loved this album. I would go and pick him up from wherever and or take him places. And he loved this album. The album was Dog Man. This was the first album that did not have Sam Taylor producing, but they did have Brendan O'Brien producing, who, if you don't know who Brendan O'Brien is, he produced Pearl Jam, Stone Temple Pilots, Black Crowes, did a lot of great music.
Yeah, I've heard of a couple of those bands.
I can't ever figure out why they didn't get more popular, especially when this album came out, because they were on Dennis Miller, they were on the Jon Stewart Show before Jon Stewart was on Daily Show. He had an MTV show called Jon Stewart Show. They opened for Pearl Jam, Motley Crue, Typo Negative, Scorpions on that tour. They should have just blown up.
You are right. And in all honesty, I'm surprised that you put them in your top three. I trust me, I know why. But this was one of my underrated that I was going to go for.
Well, they are probably, respectfully, one of the most underrated rock bands you will ever hear. And like I said, I could listen to them on loop forever. also featured on Dogman. I know you like a good cover. In 1996, they released their last album for Atlantic, Ear Candy, which was a good album. I really liked it. It featured Glenn Phillips from Toad the Wet Sprocket singing backups on another Christian rock band kind of thing.
Kind of.
1998, they were on Megaforce, maybe. They released Tapehead and Please Come Home, Mr. Bulbous. 2001, Manic Moonlight. 2003, Black Like Sunday. Ogre Tones in 2005 was the last King's X album that I really, really got into. I did get to see him live at the Alrosa Villa, which does not exist anymore, in 2017, I think. Me and a couple friends and my wife went. We got to cross that off the bucket list. Ogre Tones, produced by Michael Wagoner, big 80s metal producer. My first pick from Katy, Texas, King's X. I like it. And let me tell you what, for a band that's been around for 30X years, they still sound exactly like the album when you see them live.
I like the pick. Like I said, they were in consideration for my underrated and another band one out. I'm glad you brought that one to the table.
So who's your number two?
I think there's going to be a lot of people surprised at my number two pick.
Lenny Kravitz is half Jewish. Courtney Love is half too. Put them together.
Your second pick is Adam Sandler. I remember when this album came out, and me and my friends, we were all over it.
This is a guitar-heavy album.
I just remember the girl drummer with the fro.
Yeah. You would almost think that she was the drummer for Kid Rock.
Oh, yeah.
Same type of fro.
You know, and when these albums were coming out, I was not... I mean, as a little kid, I listened to everything in headphones or with my face 4 inches away from a speaker. But then as I got older, everything was... I was listening to it in a room with friends. It's interesting to listen to the mixes and headphones of some of those songs. It's just like fantastic, right. Fantastic stuff.
I remember an interview with Leonard Albert Kravitz when he first broke, and it was kind of a funny interview. They brought out a clip. He said, the first time you saw Lenny Kravitz on TV, it was a Burger King commercial. And it was kind of funny. And he's like, hey, well, I'm glad you said that, because the last person asked me, he goes, was you Mrs. Kravitz's son on Bewitched?
No, but he was what's-her-name's son on The Jeffersons.
Yes.
A couple, the neighbors.
Right.
The neighbors on The Jeffersons TV show were the Willises. Lenny Kravitz's mother is Marla Gibbs, who played Helen Willis.
Lenny Kravitz, it's just one of those people who... he plays good music. He almost ended up in my underrated also, but again, I had others to pick from. The other day, this song came on, and again, you know, I love a good cover. I shouldn't say the other day. It was around the C or D episode, and I was like, there's one of my K's right there. American woman, stay away from me. Now I'm going to get a little bit away from Lenny Kravitz and go to Zoe Kravitz. I know we've referenced High Fidelity, the movie, but High Fidelity, the Hulu series, she plays Rob. I loved it. Trust me, I love the series. They're not coming out with a season two because the pandemic hit. They were going to do a season two, and then all the time got stretched out, and most of the cast is dedicated to another. To
yeah, the
else.
Problem is having to keep people on retainer for 18 months while you're waiting for stuff.
Well, they couldn't do it.
That's expensive.
Yeah, and I think she had already committed to, I think, the new Batman movie. But the one thing I was disappointed in with High Fidelity was here she owns a record store, here she knows all this music, and Lenny Kravitz is nowhere in. I would have mentioned my dad somehow.
There should have been some kind of a cutesy little name drop.
Exactly, yeah. I've actually seen him in concert, and I don't think people realize how freaking good he is.
wish that I could fly into the sky so very high, just like a dragonfly. I'd fly above the trees.
I think the last time I saw him was one of the Super Bowl halftime shows. I think he was performing with Katy Perry, and he's just a badass. One of the first songs that he put out is still... See, now this ain't guitar heavy. This is just...
This is more a little R&B.
That's right.
So much time wasted playing games with love. So many tears I cried, so much pain inside. But baby, it ain't over till it's over.
I mean, this is a funky little love song. He can perform. He's got a set of pipes going unbelievable. And he can rock. He can do what he just did there, sing a little high.
I'm out here on the open road. I'm old enough to see behind me, but young enough to feel my soul.
Say my number two pick is Lenny Kravitz, and unless you knock it off my list, he'll definitely be on my top three.
He put together a really good band, really, really good live. I think I saw him performing on the Grammys, which that's not necessarily live. Got to get you some Lenny.
There you go. Groovy.
So my second pick, formed in 1993 in Bakersfield, California, we have these guys right here. Considered by everyone to be the band that started the genre nu metal, and this album, recorded in 1994, considered to be the first nu metal album. We have Korn, James Monkey Schaefer, Reginald Fieldy Arvizu, Brian Head Welch, Jonathan Davis, and David Silveria on drums, who would later be succeeded by Ray Luzier. The 1994 release gave us Blind and Chutes and Ladders. The second album, it's called Life is Peachy, and it was based on a Fieldy had one of the school folders. You remember the Peachy folders? They were spelled
P-E-E-C-H-E-E.
Yeah. They offered Peachy like $20,000 to use the image on their album cover, and Peachy turned them down. So wow. They came up with a different album cover. Mr. Rogers, which was about Mr. Rogers and more like how he taught people to be good people. Jonathan right. Davis, I believe he said in an interview one time, Mr. Rogers taught me to be a good person, and it got my ass kicked all the time for being a good person. So he was really angry with Mr. Rogers.
Right.
Adidas, which doesn't stand for the shoe. They also did a couple covers on that album, one of which being Lowrider. 1998 followed The Leader, which was probably their first big commercial success, with Got the Life and Freak on a Leash. Leader garnered them a lot of commercial success with the help of the video for Freak on a Leash that was animated by one-time comic book god Todd McFarlane. When you have a low-tune guitar, it right. just it doesn't matter what you're playing. You could be playing Happy Birthday, and it's heavier just by the yeah. sake of being low-tuned.
I think we talked about that in a previous episode.
Issues came out in 1999. There was an MTV contest to do the album cover for it. It had four different covers that were all done by fans. Somebody, Someone, Make Me Bad, and this song right here. In 2002, Untouchables was the album.
Mm-hmm.
Cost $3 million to make. It took a long time. They recorded in Phoenix, I believe, and they rented 5 houses for $10,000 a month each.
Wow.
So they each had their own house to live in. I don't know how I feel about Untouchables, the album. It's good, but it's not $3 million good to me as compared to Issues or Follow the Leader.
Right.
It did have Here to Stay and like their first kind of foray into kind of a more commercial sound with Alone I Break. Some people can't listen to Korn because they can't stand the vocals, and I get it, but the dude is an angry, messed up dude. He'll be the first one to tell you that
right.
he's messed up, and he uses music as therapy. Like some people go to a therapist, he just goes to music. 2003's Take a Look in the Mirror. See You on the Other Side was not my favorite Korn album, although it did contain one of my absolutely favorite Korn songs. So between 2005 and 2018, Korn released several other albums, including Korn 3, which was horrible. They were trying to recapture the first album kind of thing. And when you go doing stuff like that, you generally don't succeed. You know, the thing about the first Korn album was it was just absolutely raw as shit. 2019's The Nothing, their 13th album produced by Nick Raskulinich. If you've ever seen Sound City, he's featured rather prominently. It was recorded after the deaths of Davis's mother, and his wife also passed away. The Nothing is probably one of my all-time favorite Korn albums. Just from start to finish, it lasts. Want to talk about an angry album? He was sorting some stuff out with this.
I heard this just the other day.
Wonderful song. Requiem came out. I got it. It's short. It's like Van Halen album short. It's like 30 minutes long.
Really?
It's a short album. But it is their first album not to hit the Billboard Top 10 since their first album.
Really?
Yeah, their first album never hit the Top 10. And every single other album that they have. And Requiem's their 14th album. Love them or hate them, Korn created their own genre.
Without a doubt, they created that.
I love them. I respect them. I will always have a special place in my heart for Korn, whether or not it's angry or whatever, you know. That is my second pick.
All right, good deal. Hey, I dig it. That's a great second pick.
So, Randy, who is your final pick for the letter K?
My final pick.
Before distorted guitar.
Not only distorted guitar, it was a amplifier that was cut.
Dave Davies cut the speaker with a razor blade,
right.
And that's how it made it flappy.
And if you like a good cover, there's a band called Van Halen that covers this, and it's pretty damn good. Ray Davies and Dave Davies. It gets back into the brothers.
Yeah, it's like Oasis before Oasis.
Yes. The Kinks are just one of those British bands or English bands. They're awesome. To this day, I hear a Kink song, and I kind of geek out over it.
All Day and All the Night. That's probably my favorite.
I'm not content to be with you in the daytime. Girl, I want to be with you all of the time.
Kind of similar to You Really Got Me, like musically.
Oh, without
a doubt. Different enough stuff going on.
Yeah, I will say this, you know, the Kinks, great band, but yeah, they do repeat stuff here and there. And if you listen to Destroyer,
and there's a true blue inside of me that keeps stopping me, touching you, watching you, loving you. Paranoia, the Destroyer.
Yeah, it's All Day and All the Night, just in a different key.
Yeah.
And that's okay. I mean, if you're the band doing it, you're ripping yourself off. There's what are you going to do, sue yourself? You know, I mean, just You Really Got Me made them huge.
Yes, huge. Big time. The only big MTV video they had was Come Dancing.
And that, you know what? For 1982 or whatever that was when that came out, I was okay with it.
Yeah, I had no problem with it. But I'm going to say I think my favorite Kinks song.
I met her in a club down in North Soho, where you drink champagne and it tastes like Coca-Cola. C-O-L-A-Cola.
Wrote this song. They were in a bar and their road manager was hitting on this girl. And if you know the song, you know it wasn't a girl, so... My oldest growing up was the biggest Star Wars fan. He didn't know Lola, but he knew Yoda. And I think the first time he heard Lola, I think it pissed him off because
it's not the same song.
So it was funny, and I had to explain to him what a parody was.
My final pick, a couple youngsters, British youngsters named Robert Fripp, Greg Lake, formed King Crimson. The thing about King Crimson, you go to their first release, In the Court of the Crimson King, it combined rock with jazz, symphonic, classical music, and it became something called progressive rock.
Right.
They were pretty much kind of the guys that did this all. Pete Townsend called In the Court of the Crimson King an uncanny masterpiece. He's right. 21st Century Schizoid Man and The Court of the Crimson King, huge songs. And huge in both like reach and scope, like you said, that symphonic type element. And then you throw in Greg Lake's vocals, pretty powerful voice, amazing stuff. In 1970, they released In the Wake of Poseidon. And it's interesting to point out that Greg Lake had left King Crimson to form a band called Emerson, Lake & Palmer.
Correct.
And they had booked this unknown singer named Elton John to sing In the Wake of the Poseidon. But then Fripp kind of backed out of it after he got Greg Lake to agree to sing on the album. Greg Lake's payment was King Crimson's PA. So he took their PA and went off with Emerson, Lake & Palmer for singing on the album. Lark's Tongue and Aspic in 1973 was the first album with John Wetton playing bass and Bill Bruford, who was the original drummer for Yes, and then Jamie Muir, who was a multi-instrumentalist. That album is featured in the book 1001 Albums You Must Hear Before You Die.
I agree.
In 1974, Starless and Bible Black came out, and at that point, Jamie Muir had left to join a monastery, and I don't think he told the rest of the band that he was going to go off. Just kind of went off and did it. The band had started to move away from this traditional American jazz-influenced progressive rock towards a more free improvisation kind of a thing. They were known to improvise a lot live. They would do shows and they would just start out with a theme and then they would just improvise over it for 20, 25 minutes or whatever.
Wow.
Starless and Bible Black was their last album until 1981, when King Crimson reformed with Tony Levin playing bass, a very recognizable dude, and a young cat on guitar named Adrian Belew, which I don't know. If you don't know who Adrian Belew is, you've at least heard him.
That's from right down the river, too.
Yeah, he's from Covington.
Covington, yeah.
He's a producer now and does a lot of stuff. He was in King Crimson up until about 2010 or so. The big songs off of Discipline were Frame by Frame and Mate Kudasai. In Japanese, it means Please Wait. Belew's vocals, outstanding.
Still by the window pane, like the rain that's falling, she waits in the air, Mate Kudasai.
81 through 2003, King Crimson was my favorite King Crimson. 1982, the album Beat, which was influenced by the Beat writers, Jack Kerouac and all those guys. Actually, the leadoff track on the album was Neil and Jack and Me, about Neil Cassidy and Jack Kerouac.
I'm wheels, I'm moving wheels.
complex music, but it is rock.
It's very complex, and it's very artsy. But King Crimson, I don't care what anybody says, it's a rock band. If you listen, you'll find something that you're thinking, okay, that's my song. That's me. So,
I mean, they did a lot of instrumental music, but their lyrical work and stuff like that, and especially once Adrian Belew joined and started writing lyrics and stuff like that, some deep, deep, deep stuff. In 1984, Three of a Perfect Pair came out. That era, Discipline, Beat, Three of a Perfect Pair, my favorite stuff. From 1984 to 1995, they didn't do anything. They were just playing live shows and stuff like that. 1995, they released Thrack, which had a really cool song called Sex, Sleep, Eat, Drink, Dream. That's basically all you do. If you're a Dream Theater fan, somewhat of a Rush fan, and definitely like a Yes fan,
yeah,
you can see where they got a lot of their meat and potatoes.
Absolutely.
That was from some of this art rock, progressive rock pioneers, King Crimson. And that is my final pick.
Good pick. Very good pick.
So, Randy, give us the rundown.
The rundown is this. Kiss, King's X, Lenny Kravitz, Korn, Kinks, and King Crimson.
Coming up after the break, we will hit Guilty Pleasures, Hidden Treasures, and we'll eliminate two of these bands. But in the meantime, you are listening to the ABCs and 123s of Rock.
There is a creature alive today who has survived millions of years of evolution without change, without passion, and without logic. It lives to kill. A mindless eating machine. It will attack and devour anything. It is as if God created the devil and gave him jaws.
Welcome back to the ABCs and 123s of Rock. This is episode 11, bands that begin with the letter K. We've got a good list, pretty diverse list. But before we get to any of that, we have Guilty Pleasures, Hidden Treasures. Randy, what is your guilty pleasure?
My guilty pleasure, I think if you wanted to find guilty pleasure, this might be the one you would look up in the dictionary and this is what would come up.
Make another Weird Al reference too.
We could.
I saw a biographical movie about the Knack.
Oh yeah,
and it was really cool.
They sold a ton of albums, this album, for this song, but a lot of people like hated the Knack. Van Halen hit big in California and they signed Van Halen, and then they came back instead of signing Quiet Riot, they signed the Knack. And Kevin DeBro was furious over that for years, and just about every interview he would mention that the Knack was not a bad band. That album is actually pretty good. Probably only had that song and another song that did anything. My favorite part of My Sharona is towards the end. It's a good little interlude. I heard this in a movie and this is all they played. They didn't go to the, you know, the chorus or anything. And you could literally see people wondering what that song was. They knew it.
Well, the single edit for this, the 45 or the radio edit for this, didn't have a lot of this in it.
Right.
But when you hear it on like XM and stuff now, they usually play the full deal.
They do. It was a number one hit. My Sharona is off the album Get the Knack. I'm not even going to talk about follow-up albums because they did not do anything.
Well, the label did them kind of a disservice.
Big time, yes, that's a fact. But the other big song off of Get the Knack.
Good girls don't. What should they tell you? Good girls don't, but I do.
very, very cheesy song, but I'm sorry, I dig it.
I always wondered if he was singing it from the point of view of a girl.
So that's my guilty pleasure.
I dig it. My hidden treasure, typically I try to narrow it down to an album, but I can't really with this band. They were known as Katzenjammer, and at one point they became Sons of Caius, and in 1991 they just became known as Caius. John Garcia singing, Josh Homme on guitars, Nick Oliveri on bass, and drummer Brant York. They kind of got their start in a very unique way. They would get generators, and they would go out into the desert in California,
Okay. Like
Palm Desert. They would bring kegs and generators, and they would set up, and they would play in the desert. Josh Homme said that playing in the desert was like the shaping factor for the band, noting that there's no clubs here, so you can only play for free.
Yeah.
And if people don't like you, they'll tell you. And he said, you cannot suck. As fate would have it, they did not suck. They had an album come out in 91 called Wretch, which was good. Some people will say it's their favorite. I don't. But in 1992, they hooked up with producer Chris Goss, who's also in Sound City.
Yes.
And they came out with Blues for the Red Sun. Them hooking up with Chris Goss was probably what made them into what they became. Song Green Machine, Thong Song, which is pretty humorous, Mondo Generator, big songs for a band that nobody had ever heard of.
Right.
Really. Josh Homme, of course, Queens of the Stone Age.
Right.
After Blues for the Red Sun, they came out with Welcome to Sky Valley, Gardenia, Space Cadet, and probably my favorite Caius song, Demon Cleaner. Then, in 1995, And the Circus Leaves Town came right out.
That's the one that I'm more familiar with.
That was probably the last. Hurricane, Phototropic, El Rodeo.
El Rodeo, yeah. Jumbo, blimp, jumbo.
You're talking about Josh Homme.
Right.
And Josh Homme can write some weird stuff. Just listen to Songs for the Deaf. That is absolutely listenable and very accessible and approachable as a listener.
Well, it's got that Black Sabbath tone to it.
Josh Homme downtuned his guitars
right. And
used buzz pedals with great aplomb. And it shaped his playing, and it shaped the sound of the band. I mean, they've been called desert rock.
Stoner rock.
That's what I was going to say. To me, they just kind of more struck me as that stoner rock vibe.
Right.
Whether or not they were stoned, and I'm sure they were, they kind of make no beef about the fact that, you know, they did a lot of drugs.
Right.
It resulted in some really great music. I mean, I'm not advocating that or anything like that, but Sgt. Pepper's, I mean, you know. Yeah, my guilty pleasure-ish, hidden treasure-ish.
No, hidden treasure's fine. They're
a little bit of both. They were known as Caius.
Good deal.
With that said,
round two.
We've got to eliminate bands. Randy, what are the six bands again?
The six bands are Kiss, Kings X, Lenny Kravitz, Korn, Kinks, King Crimson.
Who are you going to get rid of?
My choice is to get rid of Kings X, Korn, or King Crimson. That's a tough one. I can tell you Korn's going nowhere. I mean, I dig. I truly dig King Crimson, but I'm going to have to take them off the list.
Randy, we love you, Randy.
Back to me, Randy.
It was close. Seriously close. I almost took King's X off, but I just couldn't bring myself to do it because there's some songs that I just really like.
Well, if you would have taken King's X off, there'd have been a fight. What are my three choices? The Kinks, Lenny Kravitz, and Kiss. Kiss stays. just because, I mean, and it's not fair because dude made it, had an impact, but the Kinks really
got you.
They really got me all day, all of the night. I'm going to get rid of Lenny Kravitz, and I hate to do it because that's
That hurts me. So, but yeah.
Well, it kind of hurts me too, yeah. Because man, he was profound in 1992. I mean, I was all about him.
Right.
And just on the power of Van Halen covering your right. Right now, man, I mean, that's they
say deserve, no more.
They deserve to
I got
stay.
You. All right. That was rough.
That was rough, man. When we come back, we're going to hear from our underrated bands, and we're going to get us a list and get on out of here. In the meantime, you are listening to the ABCs and 123s of rock.
If something frightening happens to you today, think about it. It may be a warning. It may be the omen. 20th Century Fox presents The Omen. It is too much to be an accident. Too strange to be a coincidence. Too frightening to be ignored. Gregory Peck, Lee Remick, The Omen. Rated R. Under 17, not admitted without parent. You have been warned.
Welcome back to the ABCs and 123s of rock. This is episode 11, bands that begin with the letter K. We are down to four bands, and we're going to make three bands out of four bands.
We're going to do that.
But before we do that, Randy, who is your underrated band?
Okay, we talked about them, I think, when I mentioned Greta Van Fleet and Greta Van Fleet sounding like Led Zeppelin. I think I mentioned Kingdom Come. They sounded like Led Zeppelin, but then when I went back and listened to them again, I thought they sounded like other people.
Lenny Wolf, you know, he's got the right. Robert Plant on Helium kind of going.
That's why I didn't think they really sounded that much like, but I mean, I still get it, and I got it then. I mean, that does sound like Led Zeppelin, but...
It's Cashmere.
It is, yeah.
I mean, it's close.
Yeah. You know, I didn't know forever that they were from Germany.
Yeah, Lenny Wolf is from Germany, yeah. I forget the name of the band he was in before Kingdom Come, but they weren't nearly as good as this album anyway. Right. The second album, meh. But this first album, What Love Can Be and Get It On and stuff, man.
Well, again, without getting into them crazy deep, they more imploded on themselves because he suffered from LSD, lead singer's disease. He had issues with the bands. They always fought. I guess they were touring and he was, you know, not on the bus. He was in a limo. But man, is that not good?
The dude from Greta Van Fleet sounds more like Lenny Wolf than he does Robert Plant, I think, personally. I can remember learning all these songs.
Oh, yeah?
Learning Get It On and learning this song for countless nights. I forget the guitar player's name, the lead guitar player's name, but he's all right. This guitar solo on this song is all right.
Yeah. This is What Love Can Be for the people not familiar. I really liked this when it came out, and I didn't care about the comparison. This is what Jimmy Page said about Kingdom Come. Quote, obviously, it can get to the point where it gets past being a compliment, and it can be rather annoying. When you've got things like Kingdom Come actually ripping riffs right off, that's a different thing altogether. Unquote.
Well, it's funny that Jimmy Page would say that.
That's exactly
because
what I thought.
He had to go to court
many times.
Several times, and they won a couple cases, but they lost a couple cases.
They
too.
Lost more than they won. Back to Kingdom Come. Their stuff rocks, and their guitar player is great. But I'm going to tell you what, their slow stuff, I mean, it's soul wrenching. It grabs you.
Now, see, this sounds like a Led Zeppelin song. I mean, it's not, but boy, you know, I mean, that kind of that repeating that, kind of thing, that's got Robert Plant all over it.
Another wave of sadness, another touch of madness.
So keeping it short and sweet, go out and listen to Kingdom Come.
So that brings me to my underrated band. About 2002, I was going through the old record store and I came across a band called Killswitch Engage. Released an album called Alive or Just Breathing that had their first kind of big-ish hit called My Last Serenade.
Okay.
Metal as metal could be metal. In 2004, they came out with an album called The End of Heartache, and in between these two albums, the singer Jesse Leach left the band, and he was replaced by Howard Jones. No, not that Howard Jones. The song The End of Heartache is one absolutely fantastic metal song. There's a video for The End of Heartache. It's a live video, and you can watch Adam, the guitar player, in the middle of the song. He jumps off stage and walks to the bar and gets a shot while he's playing the song. He's got his guitar on, and he's playing, and he's taking a shot while he's playing a solo. Fantastic.
That's cool.
The first two Killswitch Engage albums, heavily underrated. The two different kinds of singers. I like Howard Jones's voice better than Jesse Leach.
Okay.
Jesse Leach is fine. And Howard Jones has gone on. He just released an album with YouTube guitar guy Jared Dines. They probably are as much responsible for metalcore as anybody else.
Okay.
They kind of came up with their own thing.
I agree with that.
Just like how Korn had created new metal out of thin air, Killswitch is probably as responsible for metalcore as any other band.
Right. Yeah, I agree with that. Oh, and one thing that you did not mention, Howard Jones is from Columbus, Ohio.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I totally forgot. My underrated band.
Oh, good pick.
Killswitch.
Round three.
Randy, who are these four bands that we are left with?
Kiss, King's X, Korn, and Kinks. But I cannot go through the episode K without playing this song.
I've been roaming around, always looking down at all I see. Painted faces fill the places I can't reach. You know that I can use somebody. You know that
this song made them kind of household names.
Oh yeah, I could almost put them in the underrated, but I can't put Kings of Leon as underrated.
So give me your 1, 2, and 3.
Kings of Leon, Lenny Kravitz.
Wait a minute. Kaja Goo Goo.
So, my order. Kiss is number one. Korn, Kinks.
Kiss, Korn, and the Kinks.
Yes.
My 1, 2, and 3. Kings X is one of my favorite bands in the world. They're the number one band. My number two band is Korn. And my number three band is Kiss.
Well, we agree on Korn too.
All three of them could be in any place on that list.
I'll just tell you this. If you would have taken Kinks out, mine would have been Kiss, Lenny Kravitz, Korn. I enjoy this. This is a lot of fun for me. I don't want to sound pretentious, but I do go back and listen to these episodes. And I do. I like it. I would listen to us if it wasn't me.
I can dig it.
I like it.
Comments, questions, suggestions, durations, anything like that, you can send it to the ABCs and 123s of rock at gmail.com. You can also stop by our Facebook at facebook.com/RandyandTonyPresent. And you can stop by our main page at abcs123s.buzzsprout.com. Tell us what you love. Tell us what you hate. Let us know what you think, because we do pay attention and we do appreciate all the feedback. Thank you all very much for listening, and we will see you next time right here on the ABCs and 123s of rock.
Thanks, Tony.
Randy,
love you, Randy.
Make love to me, Randy.